This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now here's Mike Penna and Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, along with retired jockey Christina McManigal. We are in our Lexington, Kentucky studios and want to extend a very special welcome to everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220, XM Channel 206, and everyone tuning in worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. Of course, you can also listen on your smartphone, your tablet, whatever the case may be. Just do that at horseracingradio.net. And we can tell you that listeners in 165 countries have made the Horse Racing Radio Network their home for racing coverage here in 2015. We thank you, and we appreciate you being with us here on Jock Talk this evening. Don't forget, every week, a portion of the proceeds from Jock Talk are given back to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, that is the PDJF, the official charity of HRRN. And Christina, we couldn't think of a more worthy cause, especially with a show called Jock Talk, than the PDJF.
Absolutely, Mike. It's such a good cause. And over the past couple weeks with the Breeders' Cup, we've had different events for the PDJF, and it's great to see everyone's support for that great cause.
Yeah, so thankful that we can be involved with helping those jockeys who have given our sport so much. And because of those injuries they sustained in the saddle, they can no longer do so. But one person who is going strong is jockey Alan Garcia, and he is going to be our guest for the evening here, for this hour program here this evening. And really looking forward to catching up with Alan. He's one of the nicest guys in the sport of thoroughbred racing and one heck of a rider.
Oh my gosh, and his story, just everyone should be excited to listen.
You never know what time zone you're going to find Alan Garcia in, do you?
That's for sure.
Well, let's welcome Alan to the program here, the 30-year-old native of Lima, Peru, who graduated from the Jorge Bernardini Iori Jockey School in Peru. He's won more than 1,500 races in a career that is still going strong. He's earned more than $82 million in purses, and he was just named the Jockeys Guild Jockey of the Week after winning 2 stakes races at Woodbine this past weekend, including the Grade 2 Autumn Stakes. He's with us now on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's. Alan, welcome to the program, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to be in the radio. I appreciate it for that.
Oh, absolutely. It's always a delight to catch up with you. And Canada, how are we talking to you from Canada? Where did this decision come from?
It was coming last year before I went to Saudi Arabia. I have a good connection with this good agent, Tony Esposito. So he gave me the opportunity to come in here and show up to Canada. And then I was talking to my wife because I was moving too much in the state, going to Kentucky, Saratoga, back to Kentucky. And we don't have no stable too much. So we decided to come in here and try it out, and then everything went well.
How do you like Canada?
It's nice. I love Canada. My family, they enjoy it. We have a great time here. The whole races are great, good horses, good quality, but I can't complain about it.
Have you learned to speak French yet?
Not yet.
Is it cold there, Alan?
Yes. You respect that from Canada right now, but we're pretty good so far. You only have 3 weeks to go, and then I have no complaints.
Just wait.
What are you going to do after you finish up with this meet at Woodbine?
We're going to Gulfstream. But first, I'm going to go stop for a couple of weeks to Saudi Arabia. They invited me to go there for a couple of weeks, and then I'm going to Gulfstream.
Wow, you are everywhere. And when I say you don't know what time zone we're going to find you in anymore, it's really true. You mentioned Saudi Arabia. You spent some time there last year. What was that experience like?
It was pretty good, pretty amazing, you know, kind of weird because the language and the food, but and then you have to respect more his relationship. They're pretty strict about that, but it was a good experience.
How big is racing over there, Alan?
It's big. They're big in car racing, you know. They don't gamble there. I don't know how they make money, but they are big. The king, the prince, everybody very excited about them. They paying for good jockeys to go ride the good horses there. So they're pretty big there.
Whereabouts in Saudi Arabia is the big racetrack?
This is called Riyadh, I think it is.
Okay.
Riyadh. It's the capital, the Saudi Arabia thing, and then, like, big for them. And then there's a lot of people going to watch the races through there.
You know, that seems like such a different type of decision for a jockey to make. It's not like saying, hey, I'm going to move my tack to California or to Arkansas or to Florida. You moved it all the way to Saudi Arabia. How come?
The money is very good there. So that's a big thing for me. I mean, make money and my name, I make my name there because you can cheat from there. If you win a couple good races, the horse is going to for the Carnival, for Dubai World Cup too. So that's 2 points I'm deciding to go there for a couple weeks and then take it from there. Go through.
Was it hard to get used to the culture there? That has to be just such a culture shock from riding over here.
Yes, a little bit. It's not that hard, you know. Every place I'm wearing, I think it's the same. It's only changed the style of the jockeys. But the good thing about it, I went with my family, then paying for everything. So I was like kind of riding 2 days a week and then go home, go with my family, and then no one sickness to be home.
Oh, so you're only riding 2 days a week over there?
Yes, that was only ride two days a week, but I was like everywhere else, you're working in the morning, prepare your horses for the 2 days they're running there.
Right. So what did the family think of moving to Saudi Arabia?
Last year they went, there was my kids, they want to go again, come back again. So we have a good time. We enjoy it ourselves. And my wife especially, they give it a lot of gifts to my wife. So she want to go back again. And then maybe we have the same vlog we did last year. But this time, like, I'm going to short time and go by myself. My family is in Florida.
Wow. You know, it's interesting because that part of the world is obviously in turmoil quite often. And I know Saudi Arabia is considered to be a much safer place than other places in the Middle East, but it's still the Middle East, Alan. Did you ever feel at any point a little bit nervous or apprehensive about being there?
No, not really. I was fine. I was like being home. Well, sometimes like last year, I think the same day I was flying back from Saudi Arabia, last day, the embassy of the state, he closed for like a week. So that would make me think a little bit, oh, my God, that's kind of scary. But the people were treating me good, and then they were still taking me there. I always was protected around people, and then I don't see nothing wrong in the place I was staying.
Well, and you also, Alan, you rode Godolphin's Regal Ransom to victory at Maidan in the UAE Derby. What was that like? Is that similar to riding in Saudi Arabia?
Yes, that's similar. People they love horse racing like they're doing in Dubai. And the better thing about Dubai is the money. It was $2 million compared to the money in Saudi Arabia, a little less. But you know the emotion of a whole race in Saudi Arabia is the same thing in Dubai and then all over the world, I think.
Were there certain things, Alan, that you picked up on when you're in Saudi Arabia and even a little bit that you rode in Dubai there? Are there things that you learn with every stop along the way that make you a better rider?
Yeah, you know, like for every ride, every day is a different day. And then every time you get on the horse, you learn something about this business. You learn about how you to ride the horses, how the horse is going to act in the gate, in the race. So, unfortunately, I'm keeping learning. And then I went to different places in Saudi Arabia, making me learn a lot about horse racing, how it's going to take care, how the horse is going to behave, you know, because it's so complicated. Or like in the state, you have a gay crew here that they take care of you, and the gay over there, they don't have nobody. They push you there and you on. So I learn a lot anywhere I'm going, or like, and learn a lot here in Canada too. Like every place, like every joke, learn something about it.
How much different is that, not having somebody in the starting gate with you to make sure everything goes okay?
Sometimes I think the horse is more comfortable be alone and there. Sometimes you find a crazy horse, they're going to turn the flip. That's different. But most of the time, the horse, they're alone. They are fine. They break good. They don't have nobody there looking at it or get nervous inside, you know, because they're animals too. They want to be like alone sometimes, and then they want to try to do no mistakes.
Alan, do they use the jockeys a lot in the morning there? Do you have a lot of time? I mean, you only race 2 days a week there, so do you spend a lot of time on the horses' backs in the morning?
Yes, they're using a lot of the jockeys there. They love to the jockey, you know, the horse. Sometimes I have to gallop the horses there, breathe most of the time, but like I want to get fit too, and then not lose my fitness to ride only 2 days a week. I was galloping there and then the nicest horses, because I know it was a strong horse. I say, let me take my time a little bit.
You know, you said that one of the big adjustments was getting used to the food over there. How much different is the food in Saudi Arabia, and what turned out to be your favorite?
Because they know, sometimes they was taking me to some places, like, the tradition they have in there is like eating with your hands and then eating on the floor, sitting down. I was like, oh boy, like I was like, where my fork, where my knife, looking at it. But and after that, I was getting used to do that, to respect his traditional. And sometimes when my wife was, I was glad to my wife was there, and then she started cooking at it too. So I know I was missing some other food.
Well, the kids must have loved being able to sit on the floor and eat with their hands, right?
Oh, yeah, that was a mess. They're loving it. They would say, oh, I don't need no food. Instead, when we came here, they went still eating with your hands. Like, no, Gary, we are the same, different country now. We go back to normal.
Oh, they didn't want to. They don't want to.
Alan Garcia joining us on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So things are going pretty well up in Canada, my friend. I look at the jockey standings at Woodbine, and you're sitting in the fourth position there. So Canada's worked out pretty well.
Yes, worked out pretty well. My AE make a lot of high calls. All the momentum we have. We won like 17 state races, 9 great states. For my first year, everybody talking about it. That's the best year every jockey can do here, you know. Be one of the four in the standings, and then still going strong. So we'll see what happened in the last 3 weeks here.
What was it like, Alan, going to Woodbine, and I'm sure all of the other jockeys in the colony felt a little bit, you know, your tough competition coming in. And how was the response? Were they welcoming to you? Were they just competitive? What was that like?
It was competitive. You know, like any place out, everybody's compares itself. Everyone want to win races. And then trying to do the best. I'm trying to do my best to, you know, I'm glad I have a little need to build my business a little more here, because I came with no business to Canada. Then everybody knows I can ride, but nobody knows how I'm going to treat them in the poly track, on the big tour course. But the good thing about it, responds well, and everybody else do the same thing. So it was a little tough, but I'm glad to almost getting over. And then with next year, we came from more focus, and then I know the people know me who I'm coming now. So I respect a lot next year too.
You know, you bring up a great point, Alan, and a lot of times I don't think casual fans realize what a jockey goes through when they come to a new circuit. And they're, even though you're a known commodity and you've been on the big stage several times, you're still coming in as a relative newcomer to the Canadian jockey colony, having never ridden there full time. What does a jockey go through in terms of trying to build up their business and get new business when they come into a new circuit like that?
You know, because it's a new country, it's not like a state. So the horses are everywhere the same, but the people are different. It's, you know, they want to see you ride, they want to see you work in the morning, and they don't want to see you, oh, because you have a good name, you want to be a prima donna. No, they want to see you in the morning, they want you working. And then I'm trying my best to do all that so I can to put my name in the top here, because I'm a start from zero. It's not like, I have my name, and then you want to be 1, 2, 3, number one. No, I have to start building up my new business because it's so completely America.
All right, so you've won more than 1,500 races. I mentioned the multi-millions of dollars in purses that you've won and all the big races you've been part of. But when you come in like this, do you kind of feel like you're just getting started again, like you're a bug boy all over again?
I feel like that, but because it's a new business, it's a new world, new racetrack, and then everybody know me because my name, but they don't know me how I'm riding, how they want me to ride his horses, and then how my personality is. So I'm trying to be the humble I can, like I always was, like smile and talk to everybody, say good morning. So, you know, it's pretty hard the first 3 months while everybody adjusted, and then they know I'm going to stay here for long. So, very young, I'm happy to be here.
Alan, you mentioned riding the Pauley track and proving yourself over that kind of a surface. And what people also probably don't realize is it's a lot different. It's a lot different. And describe to our listeners what that big difference is from riding on the turf or the dirt compared to the Pauley track.
It's very different. It's like kind of riding on the turf. Horses have to like it because they feel different and that track too, like it was Kinela, like it's Pascal Down or Santa Anita used to have. I had to be very patient in there and then be confident and then waiting the longest as I can, like riding on the turf. You know, horses like the turf. Sometimes they could like the poly track, but horses like the poly track, I don't see the same thing like the turf.
And the timing, you have to get that timing down because that has to be different on the poly as well, yes?
Yeah, the timing is like you have to be patient and at the same time you have to know how fast they're going in front because they can tell you good. The thing is going fast, but they can in real, they're going slow.
All right, so we talked about all the success that you've had at Woodbine this meet and sitting there in fourth position in the standings right now. How much of that momentum, Alan, do you expect will carry over to Gulfstream this winter?
I hope so. I see a lot of people from Canada going there about like I'm going to start again zero because my business came from Canada to Gulfstream. They don't go too much there. They're going, Danny Bale is going, Roy Alfred, they're going, one of the biggest people that support me here, these two guys. Josie Carroll, she's going, but she's going with his jockey. So I have to start again, and then I'm glad to have a new agent there because my agent, Tony, can work from here to there because he's a Canadian.
Right.
So he had to get working paper to start working for me. So I'm going to change my agent to Jason Byers, the Scano's agent. He's going to have my book there. So I'm going to start working again and start smiling and trying to do my best I can.
So will you go back to some of the American trainers that you have established relationships with, like, say, Kieran McLaughlin, And will you say, hey, I'm here, I'm going to be here for the whole meet? And is that part of your approach when you go to a track like Gulfstream now?
Yes, you know, Canon is one of the biggest support when I started my career. He gave me a lot of opportunity, and a great horse for Godolphin, Dudley. I can tell a lot of names, the owner, I don't want to get upset nobody, but he was one of the biggest support I have in my career in New York. So I'm going to get and then tell him I'm going to try in the winter. If anything can do, I can help it out, because I am. You have to understand, I'm not going back to New York, and I'm not going to follow this kind of horses. I'm going to stay, going from there to Canada. But I have pretty good luck when Chad Brown sheep out here, win at state races, win races for him. Christophe Clement, give me a lot of opportunity. Billy Mond, he both horses cheap out here and win both races. So, and Grand Motions, we want to support too in the States. So I hope that I can keep my luck there and going to Florida looking for the second chance to ride there.
And you talk about agents. And agents, given that I wrote, I know that the politics involved with the sports and agents handle your business. And you were fortunate to have probably the best agent in Woodbine, Tony Esposito. But how important is it when you move to a new track to find an agent that's already established with those people that are at that certain track?
That's big. You know, like you say, one of the best agents, I think it's the best agent in Woodbine. It's big advantage because the people know him. The people get confident with him because he bring a good jockey. He knows nobody else, and then they can trust him and give you the good horses to ride his jockeys, you know, because they know he's a good agent. They're not going to take nobody. He don't want to take nobody small, or he don't know how to ride. So that's a big advantage for me this year too, to his business in a little bit, to grow up here and then step by step. Get my own business and people realize that I'm here and I can ride.
Jockey Alan Garcia joining us on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Alan, like so many jockeys we've had on this program, riding races was kind of always in your pedigree, with your dad being a jockey, your grandfather being a jockey, both in your native Peru. Take me back to the beginning and tell me about getting hooked on thoroughbred racing and wanting to be a jockey.
Like you say, my father was a jockey. My grandfather, all the time, my father was taking me almost every day. We going to the racetrack, watching galloping horses, meet people from the racetrack. Like, I've been born in about horse racing, you know. And everybody recognizing me because my father over there. And then when I get to 14 years old, I always want to be a jockey. So I went to a jockey school. It took me 2 years to get out and ride in my first race. But it wasn't my block. I always want to be a jockey. I always love the horses. I always love the scream, fast, the going. You know, I love the action in there. So I'm very fortunate. I'm, like I said, living my dream right now. I'm doing it.
Alan, is it true that at one point you wanted to be a soccer player, though?
That was when I was 7, 8 years old. I wanted to be a soccer player. I was too small to be that. So always everybody was saying, you're going to be a jock. No worry about it. Enjoy yourself playing soccer. But it was like a little hard, but most of my heart was going for the horses, not for the ball.
Do you still play soccer?
Sometimes with my friends, sometimes we play with the jockeys in Florida. We win the day ourselves, like a friendship.
Are you pretty good?
I'm trying to.
Who else? What other jockeys are good soccer players?
Oh, you have Eddie Trujillo. You have Julian Leparu, Luis Sainz, Les Cano. Wow. Who has won with Les Cano?
Any of the American guys? Do we have any American guys that are good soccer players or no?
No, they mostly play softball or baseball. Yeah, not too many.
I find it hard to believe that Julian Leparu isn't good in soccer.
I know, right?
Although the French play a lot of soccer.
They don't play baseball or football. So they're big in soccer.
That's exactly right. Alan Garcia on Jock Talk presented by Tito's. Alan, as you were growing up, you're going to the jockey school at age 14. There, you look back on some of the Peruvian-born jockeys who have made it big time here in the States, including Hall of Famers like Edgar Prado, and then you see Rafael Bejarano and Jorge Chavez, Jose Valdivia Jr. Were there certain jockeys that you looked up to outside of your dad and your grandfather?
When I was growing up there, like in the school, jockey school, everybody was talking about Chavez and Edgar Prado, but looking more for Edgar Prado too. And then when I was came here, I was looking for Johnny Velasquez, and then I realized it too. I have Frank Vittori. He's amazing rider too. And then I'm looking more forward to be like that.
Someone good to look up to. Who was your biggest mentor growing up? Was that your dad, your grandfather? Did they teach you a lot?
My father was my biggest mentor. My father, and then people on the same racetrack wanted to see me success. And then all the time he gave me his tips about horses, what I have to do. And then my father complimented more, like, okay, you have to do that. You have to be focused. And then when you in the gate, forget about every hour, only your horse. And then what is your point? What is about the cold racing? What are you learning about your program? And then so that I can tell it was my father.
Well, we're going to continue this visit with jockey Alan Garcia in the second half of the program. So many more things to get to. We'll continue to talk about his upbringing, and we'll look back on some of those memorable moments in his career, including a win in the Belmont Stakes with Deterra and that big win in the Breeders' Cup with La Hudud. We'll do that in the second half of the program. Stay with us. It's Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, fifth generation ink, distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Hey, I'm Chantel Sutherland Cruz, and want to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It's the coolest place to bet on horse racing on over 200 racetracks from America and around the world. New players receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit, up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the BetAmerica way.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word JOCKEY to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word JOCKEY to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. First, let's head to New York, where Jose Ortiz had a great week by winning the Grade 3 Tempted Stakes at Aqueduct aboard Big World. Ortiz led North America in earnings and came in the money on 53% of his mounts. For the week, Ortiz finished with 6 wins, 6 seconds, and 6 third-place finishes. Sean Bridgmahan had a solid week as he took the Grade 2 Chalukyi Stakes at Churchill aboard Spelling Again. Bridgmahan consistently came in the money on 50% of his mounts and finished the week with 5 wins, 2 seconds, and 5 third-place finishes. Next, let's head to California, where Santiago Gonzalez had a strong week highlighted by wins in the Catherine Crosby Stakes and the Betty Grable Stakes at Del Mar. For the week, Gonzalez finished with 3 wins, 2 seconds, and 4 third-place finishes. Finally, our Jockeys Guild Jockey of the Week, Alan Garcia, put on a show at Woodbine as he won the Grade 2 Autumn Stakes aboard Are You Kidding Me and the Jammed Lovely Stakes aboard Strong Incentive. Garcia came in the money on 55% of his mounts and finished with 3 wins, 1 second, and 2 third place finishes. Are you interested in learning more about the jockey's profession? Bob Fortas and Gary West explore everything that goes into winning a race from the rider's perspective in their new book, Ride to Win, an inside look at the jockey's craft. How do jockeys land mounts? How did they plan strategy? What's actually happening on the way to the starting gate? What are jockeys thinking and trying to do as the race unfolds? The book answers those questions and many more. Visit JockeyTalk360.com for excerpts and testimonials. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. For all the latest news in the jockey world, visit JockeyTalk360.com and follow us on Twitter at JockeyTalk.
This is Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
They come into the top of the lane. They turn the pressure on now. La Hadoo, the new leader. Argentina battles back at the rail passage. And time is right there. Let's show this key. Can she find room in the yellow sleeves? Honey Rider on the grandstand side coming on gamely. But it's La Hadoo who strikes the front. And La Hadoo's in full flight for the wire. Passage of time. Honey Rider down the center. Then Let's show this key. All my loving. La Hadoo digs deep. She finds more. Passage of time. Honey Rider on the outside. La Hadoo keeps on going. The more they ask, the more La Hadoo gave. And La Hadoo has won it. Honey Rider was second. Passage of time third. The show this key. Beat all my loving out of the force wire.
And welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. La Hadoo, so impressive in winning the Filly Amare Turf in 2007. Of course, ridden by our special guest here this evening, Alan Garcia. That was his very first Breeders' Cup mount. Not a bad way to start, as he gets the victory that afternoon, and a huge win it was. We're going to talk to him about that coming up in the second half of the program. But do want to remind you, if you missed any portion of Jock Talk here tonight or any week, go back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast. So many people from around the world have been doing that. We've gotten great feedback from everybody enjoying the programs, and we welcome you to go to horseracingradio.net to check out those podcasts. Mike Pennett, Christina McManigal in our Lexington studios. And Christina, boy, what... so much fun with Alan in the first half of the program, and I can't wait for the second half.
He's just this world traveler with great story. It's fantastic.
Well, we're going to get into some of those stories here in the second half of the show. You just heard La Hadoo winning the Filly Amare Turf in 2007. And Alan, how about that? Your very first appearance in the Breeders' Cup, and you're going to the winner's circle. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. You know, my first... that was my second grade one. I was one with the same filly, so I was so excited to only be in the Breeders' Cup because they talk about, you know, all the tradition he has, that kind of races, and then the prestige they have. So being on that race, it was special for me. So win it, after a while, I was like crying. I can't believe I won this race. And then the opportunity to be on it. So it was very special.
She had to be so special to you to take your first grade one with the same filly, and then to become the third jockey ever in history to win a Breeders' Cup on your first attempt. That just had to be you had to be overwhelmed with emotion.
Oh yes, it was unbelievable. I was thinking about it. Oh, I was the 4th or 5th hotel be winning in that kind of race. Well, only was like, God, I'm winning that race. I'm winning it. I can't believe it. I did it. And it's especially Mamo Park because that's where I was started when I came to America. So he was pretty emotional for me in there. I mean, I can't believe it.
Wow. How often will you go back and watch the replay of a race like that?
Once a month, because she's in my favorite filly. She's was a big part of my career because that was people see me, I can keep him riding, I can take a good horse to the next level. So that she's a big part of my career. So I watch once a month all the time that race.
You know, it's interesting. We have a show every Wednesday night called Trainer Talk, and my partner Jude Feld will sit in with me on those shows. He trained horses for 20 years in California, and he always tells me that when he was in a slump and things weren't going well when he was training, he would go back and pop in the tape of one of his big wins, and it would kind of remind him that, hey, I can do this. My program, my philosophies work. So is it the same thing for a jockey? If you're going through a bit of a rough time and you're not winning races the way you want to, you can go throw in the CD of a race like that and remember that, yeah, I do have what it takes to compete at the top level.
Yes, I was doing that, but I have my two kids and my beautiful wife, so I don't think about too much. I only do my best. I can do my best, and then watch the races with my wife, and they say, oh, you was doing that. Why you not do it again? I say, yeah, I can do that. But for me now, it's make happy my family, be with them. That's make me more strong every day, you know, think about it, what I did it the last day. You know, from every day, it's a different day for me, be happy to be with my family. So that's my big goal, be with my family, be a good parent, and then and do the best I can in my work, and then if something happened in my work, I stay there.
What an awesome attitude to have, Alan. And tell us about your family. You have two young daughters, yes?
No, two sons. Boys.
Two little boys, I'm sorry.
They're Colts.
That's okay. Matias is the old one. He has 4, and then Diego is the young one, 3. And then he's one is on his way.
What?
Little Luciano.
Wow. Wow, when's the due date?
March, the first week of March.
Oh, beautiful.
Oh,
now,
my goodness.
Now, how about your wife? Was she a racetrack romance? Is that where you met her?
His parents, they are for horse racing. His grandpa was a big jockey, and then his uncle, they are jockeys too. She's coming from blood, horse racing. So I'm trying not to be my kid to be a jockey. Trying to push him out of there.
Let him do anything else but be a jockey?
Yes. But in the end, they're going to decide what they're going to be. And they want to be a jockey. I can't take it from there because I know they're in his blood.
But you're not going to push it on him, huh?
No, definitely no. I'm going to push him out of the racetrack.
No. Oh, come on. You're not going to let him hang around the track like your dad did with you?
No, with me. I want to go to school.
Smart dad.
If they want to go with me, I'm going to be happy to have you with me. But I'm not going to do nothing they don't like.
Now, I heard one of your sons, maybe your oldest one, is he's got a pretty good arm and maybe a future baseball star in the making.
I hope so. I cross my finger that there's something in the sport. I don't have to pay college. I hear a lot of people, oh my God, I have to pay college. It's too much money. I want to do a sport. They can pay his own college and I can be okay, good.
Hey, go get a scholarship, kid.
Exactly.
Alan Garcia here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Alan, let's fast forward in your career. You win with La Hoo Dude. You mentioned how much that meant to getting things started and proving that you could ride and win on a good horse. Well, the next year in 2008, well, here comes Big Brown going for the Triple Crown at Belmont, and you're aboard, what, 38-1 long shot Deterra for Nick Zito, and all of a sudden you're the one getting your picture taken that day. Take me back to that afternoon.
That was amazing. I think that afternoon I was riding like 8 horses. I only gave 1 second all the day, but I was so excited to run the Belmont State because it was my first Belmont State, and then was going to Big Brown, going to for the Triple Crown, and I was so excited to be in the history of that race. Beyond it was like unbelievable. So I was already talking to Nick Zito about the instruction about the horse the day after. They told me, go into the lead, try to slow down, and then if you're good enough, you're going to win. And then he was so confident about the horse. He's going to run a big race, no taking nothing away for him, you're going to run good. And then, you know, I was very surprised. He broke so good. And then I was not seeing nobody going with me. And then he was galloping along. Before the game to the quarter, but I was waiting for the big brand to pass me. Say, when that guy's going to move? And realize I'm five in front. I say, oh my God, I'm going to win it. And I was start beating on my horse. I'm feeling bad in the end, but I was so excited, you know, because the emotion when won the triple count race is unbelievable.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. And it's not like you were able to run down Big Brown at the wire, or you were able to hold him off by a nose in the final strides. Big Brown was obviously pulled up out of the race at the top of the stretch by Kent DeSormo. But heck, you still played the spoiler that afternoon. So what's it like for a jockey to be in the position of spoiling a Triple Crown?
It's amazing because you're part of the history now. You know, you won. Everybody's talking about when Cam Belmont stay, you say, oh, this is the horse that went to a Triple Crown and got beat every race with this horse. With horse, Prado did it, I think did it once or twice, and then I did it once. So it's big team for me, and then even for my country, because they're watching whole races all over all the time. So when I win that race, they was calling me to interview my mother. But they was calling my mother. My mother was she was so proud of me to win that, you know, and then be part of it. That's a big thing for a jockey.
You're awfully good at that, Alan. You win your first Breeders' Cup. You win your first Belmont. That's impressive. But I heard that when you get to the winner's circle in the Belmont with Nick Zito, people were booing you.
Oh, yes. You can see that some... If you see picture from the Belmont State when I was passing the wire, everybody was tuning left. Nobody was tuning right. Everybody was paying attention to Big Brown and even my horse, and then like everybody was so sad about it. I was like, listen, the happiest man in the world is me. We won. I was so excited. Well, so some people was like, yeah, I understand that part. They want to see a Triple Crown horse, but I'm sorry.
That's right. Well, there's, you know, look, I mean, you're aboard Deterra. You're there to win the race for the connections of Deterra. You have to do your job. You want that victory as much as Kent DeSormo wanted to win that race on Big Brown. And that's just, you know, that's the reality of sports, really.
Yes, somebody has to win, somebody has to lose. So that's a sport. That's whole racing time.
How about this? So what about the day of the Belmont, before the race? We know all eyes are on Big Brown. There's a huge crowd. Everybody's there to see him. You're the opposing jockey. So what's that like in the hours leading up to the Belmont for you? What were those moments like?
I was very amazing because it was my first race in Triple Crown races. And then I was going to the bathroom all the time before the race, like, oh my God, I'm so nervous, so nervous. And then Johnny told me, said, listen, this is a Belmont. And I can't imagine if you ride in the Kentucky Derby, that's worse. And then he was true, because like my first derby, everybody went to the bathroom before going to get on the horses. I was like, oh my God, like Belmont was nothing compared to the Kentucky Derby. And then for me, it was like Kentucky Derby, the Belmont that day.
Alan, you also, another big horse, you had the opportunity to ride at one point, was Animal Kingdom.
Yes.
You had to bring that one up, didn't
I'm
you?
I'm sorry.
You had to point it out. Huh?
I'm sorry.
Everybody has a horse, no one to talk about it.
Yeah, won the Spiral Stakes on Animal Kingdom at Turfway, and we know what happened after that. He went on and won the Kentucky Derby. You ended up riding Soldat for Kieran. Of course, you won the Fountain of Youth on him earlier that same year. You go with Soldat. We know Animal Kingdom wins the race. How difficult was that one to swallow?
I took a professional because I was thinking that the right thing in my mind for my connections to Canada, and you know, and the end of the day, you have to do what you have to do. But it was so hard. It took me like a couple of days to realize it. thing at the golf with the Kentucky Derby winner, but after that was fine.
Oh, you talked about being part of history with the Belmont Stakes. I guess you're part of Kentucky Derby history now too, in that way, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, yes.
Unfortunately, I didn't say that.
Well, yeah, think about it.
Yeah, well, no, and that's all part of the game. I mean, jockeys have to make those decisions all the time. And sometimes, Alan, as you just alluded to, it is a business decision. You had the relationship with Kieran. You ride a lot of horses for Kieran. And it's a business decision as much as anything else, isn't it?
Exactly. You have to pay attention and see who is one by the better choice. And then Animal Kingdom was first time going to the dare, and then Kian and Hoss were really one on the dare, and then it was more was decision to say, okay, let's go with all that, because Kian, because we already, that horse really one on the dare, and then Animal Kingdom went going for the first time in that there. So that's a part of the business I don't like to talk about it.
Well, I think so many people would have made that same choice as well. I mean, you don't know what's going to happen on the first Saturday in May. And I guess after the race, you were probably thinking, oh, anybody but him. Anybody but him. Don't tell me he won the race.
Past the way, I was looking and say, who won that race? And you know, you have a little jealousy because you know what's in the horse. So I realized that that was my choice. So I said, I have to be professional. I take it like a man.
Did you feel like you got punched in the stomach when you see you won the race?
Punch in the stomach, punch in the face, punching everywhere else. Well, no, I was so happy for Johnny, too. He's one of my good friends. So, and Grand Marshall, he deserved to have that kind of horses.
Yeah, well said. Alan Garcia on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Alan, you mentioned the name John Velasquez a couple of times already. And you said when you came to the States back in I guess it was sometime around 2003, Johnny was one of the guys that you looked up to. And so many riders have come on this show and said that John Velasquez has been an unbelievable mentor to them. Why is Johnny so good with taking young riders under his wing?
You know, like I said, Prado was helping me a lot. And Johnny, because Johnny speaks Spanish, so I was no English at all. That's the one point. The other point, because he's a good guy, he's a humble guy, and then he wants the new kids go on and do the best he can and then get to the next level. He's not a jealous person. They don't want to say nothing wrong to not stay in there. They want to keep him growing. That's about it, about him.
Well, I guess if you could learn from two people, Hall of Famers John Velasquez and Edgar Prado, you're learning from the right people, because Edgar, well, a lot like Johnny, one of the nicest guys that you're ever going to meet, one of the hardest working jockeys that you'll ever meet, and again, a native of Peru, just like you. So that had to be special to be able to learn from a guy like Edgar.
Yes, that was very special, because everybody in Peru, they respect Edgar Prado. They know who they are. You know, he's a great person, good jockey, win a lot of good races, and then have something to tell you about when you're growing up being a jockey. If some guy like that tell you something, it's big. It's big thing. And then I always was listening to him and then paying attention to what he was riding, when he was riding horses, when he was running on the tour. He's amazing. He have a lot of respect for me.
What's the best advice they told you?
The best advice, not get in trouble, be patient, save you money.
That's big, too, because for a young kid, when all of a sudden you're making money, that has to be difficult to know how to save and to be wise with your money, yes?
Yes, because back in my country, I came from a poor family. I never have money. Like, I never have any money there. My father was working, my mother was working for bringing some food on the table. But in that situation, I was winning a lot of money, and then the money was coming, oh my God, every week, more and more and more. But these people were still proud. Was telling me, save your money, put them in the bank, do some investment, and then you can be safe when you're grown up and when you're going to retire, because the money never take you nowhere if you're not smart enough with them.
Well, that's outstanding. And we hear that a lot in the world of sports, where young guys that come into the major leagues or they come into the NFL, they'll have veterans that take them under their wing and try to help them with that aspect. Because especially if you say, you know, like you did, Alan, where you didn't come from big money and your parents were hardworking just to put food on the table, all of a sudden you get that windfall of money as being a top jockey, and it's easy to go out and just party and blow it, isn't it?
Yes, it's very easy. It's like taking like nothing, you know, because you're having fun and then you have the wrong friends around you, and then when, oh, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep paying, you don't care because you're thinking, oh, I can make it the same money next week. But the money's going away fast, and then you realize, oh, what I do with them.
Right, and especially for a jockey, not knowing how dangerous the sport is. You never know if that paycheck will be coming in next week, if you'll be safe and you know, safe to ride. And Alan, you mentioned you didn't even speak English when you first came here, yes?
I speak Spanish, yeah. So that it took me a little while to learn English, and still I'm trying to learn English. Sometimes my wife had to tell me, no, you're doing the wrong, you're saying the wrong thing right now, or pronunciation they don't say. So I'm trying my best. But in that situation, that was a little hard for me, because here in this business, or when you came to this country, you have to speak the language if you want to get business. The people, they don't want to talk to a third person. They want to talk to the jockey, straight to the jockey. You know, maybe the other person say the wrong thing, or they don't understand very well the other person. So sometimes that's hard for a new person coming here, you know, and speak their language, but they have to learn it.
Well, I think it's very important for young jockeys too. There's so many times that we'll go to talk with a young jockey and maybe his English isn't all that great, and it makes it difficult for the media to put that person out there and help get them exposure. But I think it makes it difficult for them to go to a trainer and sell themselves and say, hey, I want to be on your horses. Is that true?
Yeah, that's very true, because they're looking at you different, you know. They're looking at you like, okay, you have something to say, come on. Because they want to talk to you. They want that relationship. And sometimes you have to do socialize. That's a lot, because you never know, oh, you want to come in here and see this horse, and then they talk about the horses, and then so they say, oh, you want to ride? You want to walk in this horse? And then you can ride him. Sometimes you look in business like that. But if you don't speak the language, if you don't speak no Chinese, the Chinese will be like, okay, the next one is going to come in speaking and then pick the amount off. So
yep.
You have to be quick in this business, especially in the language.
When Johnny came on this show, he told us that he learned English by watching The Little Mermaid with Angel Cordero Jr.'s daughter, and that was his start to learning this language. How about you? How'd you learn it, Alan?
I started learning it by Dora the Explorer. I beat him. Dora the Explorer is the best. Even my kids love it.
Really?
What? Yeah, they can teach you English and Spanish. And then, you know, I was repeating, and then learn a lot from them.
Dora the Explorer.
Who would have thought?
Yeah.
Who would have thought?
Hey, whatever it takes, right? Whatever it takes.
Absolutely, whatever it takes.
Well, Alan, when you look back on your career and everything you've accomplished, what's the one thing that really stands out to you?
What I mean?
The one moment maybe in your career that you're never going to forget, or, you know, the one thing maybe that you're most proud of. What would that be?
See my kids born. That was amazing.
Were you able to be there for both of them?
Yes, both times. Both times. That's the moment I'm never going to forget about my life.
Wow. You're lucky they didn't come when you were riding somewhere.
Oh, yeah. I should keep myself. No, I will take off.
What?
That's the moment.
What goals are you still working towards, Alan?
Win races, make my name back and whatever he was, be happy, take care of my family, and then wait to my kid going to college and then be more happy.
Yeah, well said. He has it all together, and he has everything in perspective. He is a jockey, and that is just what Alan Garcia does for a living. But more importantly, he's a father raising two, soon to be three children, and he's an outstanding husband, and he is somebody who is working very hard in this sport. And Alan, we can't thank you enough for taking a little time to visit with us here tonight, and want to wish you all the best moving forward. Can't wait to see you down in Florida this winter. Safe trip to Saudi Arabia, and we'll see you when you get down there to the Sunshine State.
Yes, thank you for having me today, and then thank you all the people listen to the radio, and then we will see you in Florida.
We'll see you there, my friend, and good luck and safe travels.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
All right, you too. Bye. Alan Garcia here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's. Well, so refreshing, right, when you get a chance to sit down and really get him on a roll and let him talk about what's important to him. It's refreshing.
The information he has is just, it's incredible. And the stories and the fact that, like you said, I mean, first and foremost, he's a dad, and that's what he's about. And that's great to hear.
And nothing was going to stop him from being there for the birth of his first two children. When his third one comes along in March, I guarantee you, no matter what he's doing at Gulfstream Park, he'll be off
he'll
that
be
day to make sure he is there with his wife for number three.
For sure. That's fantastic.
Yeah, very cool. And somebody who really does work hard, trying to get his name back out there again. I mean, look, he was among the elite riders we had in 2007, 2008, 2000. I mean, he was right there at the top of the list with the John Velasquez and the Javier Castellanos of the world, trying to get back there again. And no doubt he's going to do it.
We'll see him again there.
Yeah, we certainly will. All right, don't forget, if you miss any portion of this program or any of our Jock Talk shows, just go to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen at your leisure each and every week, a podcast available for you. And that goes for all of our talk shows as well, including Trainer Talk and our call-in shows every week, and, of course, the Stakes Preview Show every single Friday evening. Been fun.
Always.
Next week, you're filling in for me. I'm out the next 2 weeks. You're flying solo.
Oh, boy. Here we go. Pressure's on.
It'll be fun. It'll be a lot of fun. Make sure you join us next Tuesday evening for Jock Talk presented by Tito's. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Christina McManigal, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Jock Talk.